Chapter 9. July 28th was a day for the record books. I look back on it, and what comes to me are people going over Niagara Falls in barrels. Ever since I'd heard about that, I'd tried to imagine people crouched inside, bobbing along peacefully like a rubber duck in a child's bathtub. And suddenly, the water turning choppy and the barrel starting to thrash around while a roar grows in the distance. I knew they were in there saying, "Shit, Bucket, what was I thinking?" At 8 o'clock in the morning, it hit 94, with the ambitious plan of reaching 103 before noon. I woke up with August shaking my shoulder, saying it was going to be a scorcher. Get up, we had to water the bees. I climbed into the honey wagon with my hair uncombed, with May handing me buttered toast and orange juice through the window, and Rosaline sticking in thermoses of water, both of them practically running alongside the truck while August rolled out of the driveway. I felt like the Red Cross springing to action to save the bee queendom. In the back of the truck, August had gallons of sugar water already made up. "When it gets over 100, she said, "the flowers dry up, and there's no food for the bees. They stay in the hives, fanning themselves. Sometimes they just roast." I felt like we might roast alive ourselves. You could not touch the door handle for fear of a third-degree burn. Sweat ran between my breasts and sopped my underwear band. August turned on the radio for the weather, but what we heard was how Ranger 7 had finally landed on the surface of the moon in a place called the Sea of Clouds. How police were looking for the bodies of those 3 civil rights workers in Mississippi, and the terrible things that had happened in the Gulf of Tonkin. It ended with a story about what was happening closer to home. How black people from Tiburon, Florence, and Orangeburg were marching today all the way to Columbia, asking the governor to enforce the Civil Rights Act. August turned it off. Enough was enough. You cannot fix the whole world. "I've already watered the hives around the house," she said. "Zach is taking care of the hives on the east side of the county, so you and I have got the west side." Rescuing bees took us the entire morning, driving back into remote corners of the woods where there were barely roads. We would come upon 25 beehives up on slats like a little lost city tucked back in there. We lifted the covers and filled the feeders with sugar water. Earlier, we'd spooned dry sugar into our pockets, and now, just as a bonus, we sprinkled it on the feeding rims. I managed to get stung on my wrist while replacing a lid onto a hive box. August scraped out the stinger. "I was sending them love," I said, feeling betrayed. August said, "Hot weather makes the bees out of sorts. I don't care how much love you send them." She pulled a small bottle of olive oil and bee pollen from her free pocket and rubbed my skin, her patented remedy. It was something I'd hoped never to test out. "Count yourself initiated," she said. "You can't be a true beekeeper without getting stung." A true beekeeper. The words caused a fullness in me, and right at that moment, an explosion of blackbirds lifted off the ground in a clearing a short distance away and filled up the whole sky. I said to myself, "Will wonders never cease?" I would add that to my list of careers: a writer, an English teacher, and a beekeeper. "Do you think I could keep bees one day?" I asked. August said, "Didn't you tell me this past week one of the things you loved was bees and honey? Now if that's so, you'll be a fine beekeeper. Actually, you can be bad at something, Lily, but if you love doing it, that will be enough." The sting shot pain all the way to my elbow, causing me to marvel at how much punishment a minuscule creature can inflict. I'm prideful enough to say I didn't complain. After you get stung, you can't get unstung no matter how much you whine about it. I just dive back into the riptide of saving bees. When we had watered all the hives of Tiburon and sprinkled enough sugar to cause a human being to gain 50 pounds, we drove home, hot, hungry, and nearly drowned in her own sweat. Pulling into the driveway, we found Rosaline and May sipping sweet tea on the back porch. May said she'd left our lunches in the refrigerator, cold pork chop sandwiches and slaw. While we ate, we heard June upstairs in her room playing the cello like something had died. We scarfed down every morsel without talking, then pushed back from the table. We were wondering how to get our tired selves to a standing position when we heard squealing and laughing, the kind you're apt to hear at a school recess. August and I dragged ourselves to the porch to see. And there were May and Rosaline running through the water sprinkler, barefoot and fully clothed. They'd gone berserk. Rosaline's moo-moo was sopped and plastered to her body, and May was catching water in the bowl of her dress skirt and tossing it up across her face. Sunlight hit the hair sheen on her braids and lit them up.
"Well, isn't this the living end?" August said.
When we got out there, Rosaline picked up the sprinkler and aimed it at us.
"You come over here and you're gonna get wet," she said.
And splat, we were hit full in the chest with ice-cold water. Rosaline turned the sprinkler head down and filled May's dress. "You come over here, and you gonna get wet," May said, echoing Rosaline, and she came after us, pitching the contents of her skirt across our backs. I can tell you this much, neither one of us protested that loudly. In the end, we stood there and let ourselves be drenched by two crazy black women. All four of us turned into water nymphs and danced around the cool spray, just the way it must have been when Indians danced circles around blazing fires.